Welcome to the Edgar Rice Burroughs Podcast, Episode 1. My name is Tim DeForest. I'm the author of a couple of books about pre-digital pop culture, including the pulp magazines of the early 20th century, the magazines that Edgar Rice Burroughs usually published his stories within. And Burroughs, by the way, is almost unquestionably the greatest storyteller of the 20th century. It's over 100 years now since his first book was published, but everything he wrote is still in print. It's still loved and enjoyed by millions. Every generation develops its own set of Edgar Rice Burroughs fans because he was such a wonderful storyteller. He had an ability to create these worlds of adventures, and I'll explain what I mean by worlds of adventures more in just a moment, where he could just have just this huge variety of adventure stories. And he set stories on Mars, known as Barsoom by the inhabitants of that planet, on Venus. He wrote the Tarzan stories, and he made Africa a world of adventure of its own, full of lost civilizations, a valley where dinosaurs still existed, so on and so forth. He created Pellucidor, the world at the Earth's core. He used the Hollow Earth theory to come up with the idea of a world existing underground, full of dinosaurs and other prehistoric creatures and various other dangers. Caspak is a lost continent in the Antarctic that was also full of dinosaurs. Burroughs, by the way, I think he loved dinosaurs, or he just knew how much everybody else loved them. So a lot of his lost worlds have dinosaurs or dinosaur-like creatures on them. And I have no complaints about that because I love dinosaurs too. Now, the first book he wrote in 1912 was Under the Moons of Mars, which was published in All Story Magazine, a pulp magazine of the day. It was very successful. It was published as a novel with the title A Princess of Mars, and that's usually how you find it today, in novel form with that title. And he wrote 10 more Martian novels after that. And what I want to do today is argue that with Barsoom, even more so than the other worlds that Burroughs created, he was able to create the perfect world of adventure, the perfect setting for a series of adventure stories. Now, what do I mean by world of adventure? A world of adventure is part of a science fiction or fantasy universe. It's a world full of heroes and villains and monsters and beautiful princesses constantly in need of rescuing. It's a place where you can't hold a dinner party without someone getting kidnapped or assassinated, where you can't step behind a bush to relieve yourself without stumbling over yet another lost civilization. Now, a world of adventure can come in many shapes of and sizes. As I mentioned already, Burroughs alone created just many different worlds of adventures to set his stories within. But no matter what the exact makeup, a properly constructed world of adventure would have two very important things in common. First, there would be enough room to believably have a lot of variety. You know, you need a variety of ecosystems and civilizations populated by a variety of races and cultures. Mars certainly had that. We'll talk about that more in a moment. And you know, it's a planet. So there's always room for Burroughs to create a new setting that his heroes can stumble across and have an adventure within. The other thing is that all this cool stuff has to make sense according to the internal logic of that world. When building a world of adventure, a writer can't just toss in elements willy-nilly. A well-constructed world of adventure should be diverse, but every aspect of it should fit properly into the history and the ambiance of that particular world. For instance, let's just use Middle Earth as an example. It would make no real sense at all for Frodo and Sam to stumble upon a crashed alien spacecraft on their way to Mount Doom. I admit that's actually kind of a cool idea, but it simply would not belong in Tolkien's world. Fiction works best when a fictional world has appropriate boundaries. So the universe, according to Edgar Rice Burroughs, has all these different world of adventures. Earth alone has lost civilizations hidden all over Africa, a lost continent, Pellucidor, and so on. Add to this the rich, diverse worlds of Venus and Mars. And it's Mars where Burroughs has arguably constructed his best world of adventure, a place upon which it felt like anything could happen, and new civilizations, races, monsters, and super scientific weapons could be constantly introduced without ever violating the established internal logic of the planet. And there's several reasons why this is such a perfect place to have adventures. First, there's the planet itself. In the late 19th century, astronomer Percival Lowe wrote about what he thought were systems of canals on Mars, and he theorized that an advanced but dying civilization was desperately tapping into the polar ice caps to delay their inevitable doom. Now, this idea became a common template in science fiction, and Burroughs just ran with it, creating a planet that not only depended on the canals for water, but also on an atmosphere plant to keep the air breathable. So the ambiance this generates by itself is an important part of Barsoom's appeal. But the practical aspects of this also open up vast storytelling possibilities. The dried ocean beds are lined with ancient abandoned cities, convenient spots to run into danger from hungry fauna, most commonly the great white apes, that often take up lodgings in the empty buildings. It also allows for isolated areas where strange civilizations and unknown creatures can still be found. And since this is a planet we're talking about, with the dried up ocean beds vastly increasing the land area and isolating inhabited areas from one another, Burroughs would never run out of room in which to toss in yet another new civilization or monster. Also, the very fact that Barsoom is an alien world opens it up to variety, because it would have a flora and fauna very different from those of Earth. There are humans, of course, because John Carter, the main character of the novels, who's an Earthman teleported to Mars, well, he needs a human woman with whom to fall in love. But there's also the four-armed green Martians that capture Carter when he first arrives on Mars. Later, we meet other bizarre intelligent races. And the flora includes ambulatory, blood-sucking plant men, while the fauna include the apes, a species of giant insect, and multi-legged equivalents to, among other things, dogs, horses, and lions. Then we have the fact that Mars is named after the god of war, so naturally it has a warlike culture. This is justified in that the Martians have a lifespan of over 1,000 years, so constant warfare is an effective way of keeping the population at a level that can be supported by a dying ecosystem. Thus, Martian cities are pretty much constantly at war with one another, another element that provides constant storytelling fodder. But there is one strange element to Martian warfare. Despite having rifles with absurdly long range, Barsoomian soldiers are always going at each other with swords. A few critics, such as the noted science fiction writer L. Sprague DeCamp, were annoyed to no end by this. But most of us simply accept it. Part of the reason is that it's simply really cool, a demonstration that a plot element doesn't have to make complete sense if it's awesome enough. But it's not completely without justification. The warlike nature of the average Barsoomian means that they simply like fighting with swords. Also, their culture requires you to defend yourself only with weapons equivalent to what your attacker uses. So if someone attacks you with a sword, you're not allowed to use a rifle or a pistol. Now, aside from the firearms, the existence of fast-flying vehicles and the occasional appearance of a super scientific device, which included over the years giant magnets, genetic engineering, and several different methods of becoming invisible, that this adds to the variety. So let's just do a quick overview, a brief overview of the novels, to see in detail just how exceptional Barsoom is as a world of adventure. A Princess of Mars, the story originally titled Under the Moon of Mars, begins with an apparently immortal Earth warrior named John Carter being mysteriously transported to Mars. Neither Carter's long life nor his transportation to Mars is ever really explained, but the ambience of the books allows us to accept this at face value. I stated earlier that a world of adventure should make internal sense, but this is yet another instance where a good storyteller can leave in elements of mystery and still make his world a believable one. Now on Mars, Carter finds that the lower gravity translates into greater strength and agility for him, giving him a helpful boost in his fighting abilities and making him stand out even more than he already does from other characters. He's captured by the Green Martians, giving him time to learn the language and something about the cultures of Mars. He also meets the incomparably beautiful and frequently kidnapped Deja Thoris, promptly falling in love with her. His ensuing adventures include a battle with the White Apes in an abandoned city, captures and escapes, a series of fights in a gladiator arena, and all-out warfare involving vast armies. Along the way, we discover that the Red Martians, the most populous human race on Barsoom, have flying machines simply called Flyers. This is another important plot element to building the planet into the perfect world of adventure, since it allows protagonists a believable way to get from one place to another when Burroughs needs them to do so. It's also an important part of building the ambiance that allows Burroughs to toss in super scientific devices whenever he wants. We learn that Martians have a low-key telepathy, something that is useful primarily to help control trained animals, but providing yet another plot element that could be used effectively in later stories. In The Gods of Mars, the second book, we visit the Valley d'Or, one of the few places on Mars with abundant plant life, which included those blood-sucking plant men. We run into several more human races, white and black, including the cannibalistic Therns. The Warlord of Mars, the third book, takes us to the Kaorian Forest, where Carter encounters a giant poisonous insect called the Sith, and to the Martian North Pole, where yet another human race, the Yellow Race, uses a giant magnet to trap flyers and enslave their crews. Book number four, Thuvia, Maid of Mars, shows us that Barsoom is big enough to give us more than one hero, with the action now centering on Carthoris, the son of John Carter and Deja Thoris. He spends most of the novel rescuing the perpetually endangered Thuvia, a Martian princess with the telepathic ability to control the Banth, the giant eight-legged lion that is one of Barsoom's most dangerous creatures. The Chessmen of Mars gives us my personally favorite Martian race. The Kaldanes are large, disembodied heads that walk about on spider-like legs and occasionally attach themselves to a headless humanoid creature called a Rykor. It's literally impossible to create an alien race more awesome than that. We also encounter a remote human civilization that plays chess with men in place of pieces and requires an actual fight to the death when one piece captures another. Martian science provides several ways to turn invisible. The hero of The Fighting Man of Mars uses an invisibility paint. One of four stories that make up Lana of Gathel takes place in a pair of remote cities where the inhabitants use invisibility pills. While the natives of one of Barsoom's two moons encountered in Swords of Mars can use telepathy to render themselves unseen. A somewhat mad scientist named Rast Thavis spends much of the mastermind of Mars performing organ transplants, including putting a human brain into an ape body. Rast Thavis returns in the synthetic men's of Mars to try and create life, producing deformed monsters and other genetic oddities. Now, fans of the series sometimes prefer to dismiss the last book, John Carter of Mars, because it was partially written by Burroughs' son John, and it simply isn't that good. But if we accept it as canon, then we can add a 130-foot-tall giant constructed from the corpses of 10,000 dead men to the Martian bestiary. After the giant is disposed of, Carter has to face off against an invasion of skeleton men from Jupiter. The skeleton men, by the way, are equipped with invisible spaceships. It's really beyond me why Earth scientists haven't discovered invisibility. There's apparently so many ways to get there. Now, keep in mind that all these diverse plot elements introduced gradually over the course of 11 books all make sense in context. I'm even fine with the giant from the last book. Even though the story isn't very good, the idea is sound. So also remember that this is only a brief overview. There's a lot more cool stuff I didn't get around to mentioning. In fact, Barsoom is so diverse that it can easily accommodate other works of fiction. At least two modern writers, Alan Moore and George Alec Effinger, have put H.G. Wells' Martians from War of the Worlds on Barsoom, launching themselves towards Earth just before John Carter and his army can destroy them. So Burroughs created a dying world with a relatively sparse population, giving the world room to grow. He then introduced elements of super science and used the rule of cool to justify unexplained plot devices or occasional lapses in logic. The result is one of the most satisfying and diverse worlds of adventures ever created. A world that spits in the eye of real life and lifeless Mars, and still lives in the imagination of its fans over a century after it was conceived. So anyway, that is Barsoom, the world's perfect world of adventure. In episode 2, I'll talk about Africa and how Burroughs turned that into a world of adventure. For now, once again, my name is Tim DeForest. You can find my blog at Comics, Old Time Radio, and Other Cool Stuff. You can look me up on Amazon to find my author page to see the books I've written. Please do so. Buy my stuff. Make me rich beyond the dreams of avarice, and so on. Thank you for listening.